All right, so if I can get everyone to take their seats. Oh, that seemed very loud. Sorry. I mean to yell at y'all. All right, so welcome. So my name is Tamara Morgan, and I am the manager of GameSense Programs and Training for BCLC. And before we start and I introduce our speaker, I want to remind you that Slido is available for this session, so feel free to ask a question through the website at any time during the presentation. And it's my pleasure to introduce you to our presenter for today's presentation called Connecting the Dots, Reducing Gambling Stigma and Increasing Support. He just spent a moment giving me a tutorial on how to pronounce names properly, but this is Dung Koo. He's worked with high-risk adults and youth struggling with addictions in both outpatient and residential treatment settings. He has 10 years' experience leading and training counselors in practice-based outcomes. And as the Director of Support Services for the BC Responsible and Problem Gambling Program, he consults with a team of 25 counselors and 10 outreach workers to deliver an evidence-based program to BC residents. And he's joined today by some of his representatives from the province's gambling support program.
Thanks, Tamara.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tamara. Yeah, hi everyone. I'm Dung Koo. Some of you may know me by my previously colonized name, which I will not mention today, but it is Dung Koo. My name is Gu Wai Dung, which is Cantonese for ancient memories of the East. So I'm reclaiming my heritage, and it's very grounding. What I'd like to do, first of all, is I'd like to just talk about a bit about why we do land acknowledgements. So you're probably hearing land acknowledgements a lot now. In your workplaces and places of work, and maybe in your children's schools, wherever that might be. But to me, the land acknowledgement is about keeping truth and reconciliation present, and that it's a direct contradiction to past policy and practices of invisibilizing Indigenous peoples, their lands, and their roles and responsibility on the planet. So I think also truth and reconciliation, when we do land acknowledgements, is about honoring the courage of Indigenous peoples speaking out. When we think about residential schools, the 60s scoop, all of the different practices that we did to try to wipe out culture and people so that we could continue to settle on these lands and have capitalism thrive and to play and live and work. So what it is just recognizing that we didn't do that. We weren't successful in wiping out Indigenous people. They are very much alive and present today, and they have very much a role to play. When we look at the challenges that we're facing in the world right now with climate change and, of course, this coronavirus piece and so on, how do we work together and how do we support and ally with Indigenous people as the protectors of the land? We, of course, have our meeting here today on the unceded territories of the Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and the one more, Musqueam territories, and you probably have a connection, or hopefully you'll have a connection ongoingly with the land that you live and work and play on as well. One thing that is that I didn't know about recently on these lands is that there's a beautiful interpretive center at the Squamish Lilwat Center, Cultural Center in Whistler that I was at a few months ago, and they have a youth ambassador program who is really going for sharing and celebrating knowledges. So welcome, and we'll move on to our presentation. So, who have not heard about the Gambling Support Outreach Program, previously called the GAMINFOREP Program? Could you just raise your hand, just kind of see? Okay, great, okay. So some of you who've been to New Horizons before, what we're going to do is we're going to give you a presentation overview in terms of what the program is, what it does, and our numbers, the impacts. And that may not be new from previous ones, but today what we want to do is we want to not just talk about the impact we're having on reaching more and more people, but how we do what we do and why we think we're now being quite effective at reaching people and reducing stigma and reducing harms. So about 4 years ago, our program's been in existence for about 15 years. But 4 years ago, up until 4 years ago, the status quo was that all we had was the counseling services. And of course, we work with people, give them free counseling, working with problem gambling. GameSense has been around for a while. 4 years ago, we still were in a co-managed situation where GPEB, Gaming Policy Enforcement Branch, who I work with, co-managed with BCLC to have GameSense advisors in the casinos to support people who are having distress in venues. Then we had a 24/7. At the time, it was called the helpline, right? And people can call that up 24/7, 365 days a year for information and support if they were experiencing concerns about gambling. And then, of course, you always had the community agencies, shelters, bankruptcy trustees, mental health, financial aid, all the supports that people who may be experiencing direct impacts from gambling harms now have to access some of these services. The blue circle in the middle, the gambling support outreach, which, by the way, we started a pilot 3 years ago, and you may know them as the GAM Info Rep, so we're rebranding that now because what the feedback we got was the GAM Info Rep didn't make any sense. We explained it to people, and they understood it, and then they talk about GIRs, like you talk about GSAs. But we've decided that we're just going to rebrand this clearly as gambling support or gambling support outreach. It's just really clear. So what we have is we have gambling support in the community, and we have counseling, two different things. So 3 years ago, we ran a pilot with just one outreach person, and we told the helpline at the time to say, when people call in and they're looking for support, do what you normally do. And then if at the end of the call, when you offer them free counseling, which was our standard thing, was like, so it sounds like you're experiencing some of these things. Would you like to access free counseling? Because that is available to you. Many people would say, no, that's okay, thanks. Help, information was very helpful, but if I need it, I'll call back. So in the pilot, what we said is, hang on, before you leave, would you be interested in talking to someone who's not a counselor and who could meet up with you at a coffee shop nearby and continue this conversation about some of the things that you might be exploring or some of the information you'd like to have? In that first year pilot, so we looked at a 6 month, we looked at 6 months comparison for the next 3 years. In the first 6 months from August to January, we had a 58% increase in people saying yes when they called into the support line. Oh, okay, yeah, I'll take that. I don't want counseling, but I'll take that. When the GSA program transferred into BCLC and we kept some of that money and we started our outreach program 2 years ago, we hired 11 outreach workers at the time. In that next same 6 months, we saw a 92% increase. And this last year, we're seeing a 107% increase in new people who would have said no before and are now being helped in some way to whatever they want to do. They don't have to come to counseling. They can just go online. They can find a support group somewhere else that has nothing to do with gambling, but they're starting to get access to services. Does that make sense? So the numbers are in 2016, we had 183 people. I'll just go back here. Sorry, I went ahead of myself. But these are the numbers right here. So in, I'm just getting used to this pointer. Okay, it goes really fast. In 2016, we offered counseling only. We had 183 new gamblers sign up for service. These are not affected others, by the way. These are literally just gamblers, people concerned about their own behavior. In the pilot, we had 290 people sign up. That was in 2017. The first year we had the service, the outreach service, with 10 people across the province, 11 people across the province, we had 351. This was the 92% increase compared to the green band when we didn't have it in place. And now this year, the last 6 months, August to January of this year, we had 379 people, 107% increase. So we know we're onto something. We know that there is stigma. Our guess that stigma was preventing people from accessing service, you can see the numbers, it's all there. What we do differently now is, as well, is when you think about the person having to go, I keep hitting the wrong button. When we think of people having to go from game sense, so they're distressed in the venue, it was a big leap. It was their own choice. Of course, we have the support line number. Currently, it's still a helpline on your bathrooms and slot machines and so on. But when they call that 1-888 number, that's one step. But again, to get from there to counseling, we had a lot of drop-off. You could imagine it for yourself if you're facing some kind of an issue. To go from calling to actually walking into counseling office, or to go from GainSense over to here, or to go from a community agency to counseling, you had to do it on your own. You don't have to do that anymore, because we have outreach people now who can help you figure out how to move in the way that you want to move, in the way you want to move, if that makes sense. Okay. All right, I think I need to move on. So that's maybe the new information you heard today if you've been at previous New Horizons conference presentations, is that the numbers are continuing to increase in our uptake of new people that we're supporting more. But today what we want you to walk away with is more of an understanding of exactly how we do what we do and why we think we're being so effective at engaging people differently than before. And I think there's no better way for you to hear that than from the people who work directly in the field every day. And I'm going to have Margaret speak first.
Hi, I'm Margaret Sigsworth. I started in this program in 2008 as a GameSense advisor, then worked in the community in prevention, and now in this role in support outreach. I could always see that there was more we needed to do. There was something that was missing. So I love this new position. We work with people working with their immediate needs as they need them. And then when they're not in crisis, we help them work on their plan. When somebody has been gambling for a long time, gambling becomes their way of dealing with everything. It's what they do for entertainment. It's what they do when they're angry. It's what they do when they're upset. It's what they do when they have a fight with their spouse or their boss. So for lots of people, when they take that out of their lives, they need to be putting really good things back into it, and that requires a plan. So for people that have used gambling as their default for everything, if they're not putting those protective things in, they often just turn back to gambling. And when people are telling me that they've had a failure, or they weren't successful in changing their or modifying their behavior around gambling, it's often because they missed those things. They missed putting things in. So a lot of what we do is help them with their plan. And I'm really honored to work on people's plans with them. And when there's a plan, we're both hopeful when we leave the meeting. And then I'd like to pass you on to Ben.
Hi, my name is Ben Wong. Before joining the team in August 2018, my background was in for over a decade in substance use as well as gaming disorder. And since joining the team, I really have been treasuring my last year and a half of time being on the team. A big reason is the flexibility as we execute our mandate. Yes, problem gambling, but our team is so flexible and so ready to meet where participants, potential clients are, that we welcome any sort of entry into starting a conversation with us. They want to talk about problem gambling, we talk about problem gambling. They want to talk about something other than problem gambling, other aspects of their lives affected by problem gambling, and not specifically the gambling part, we do that too. 0-0-0 barriers. We try to meet them where they are. We try to offer support services or connect them to relevant resources that would be supportive at the immediate moment. And in my mind, that's harm reduction at its best, destigmatizing the situation and really allowing people to start a conversation where they would not be able to elsewhere. And now I'm going to pass the time to Cheryl.
Thanks, Ben. Hi, I'm Cheryl Prowse. I've been everything from a correctional officer to a dean of a college. I now work with this program. And have a background in social work and education. And I just wanted to tell you a little bit about why I love, working with this team and this program. I want you to think about, just for a minute, what it feels like for someone to come into your home and ask you a bunch of personal questions and try and figure out what exactly is going on in your life, right? So we put a big old magnifying glass on you. What's happening over there? Why are you behaving that way, right? A lot of us would be like, why is this person doing this? Why are you asking me these questions? And yet we expect that our participants will just freely talk to us, don't we, about their most intimate and personal things that are going on. So for me, working in this program, I always look at it as being very, very honored that somebody would invite me into their life. And it's sometimes at the most difficult moment they're having. And they'll share with me, and they'll allow me to walk that journey with them, right? And I know there's a lot of Game Sense advisors in here, I think. Hands up. Yes. And they do the same thing for you in the venues, don't they? That's a very, very honorable moment for us to be able to share in. So that's why I think the program is really important. That's why I really love being in the program. So I'm just going to segue us. Here, I'll stop. I'm going to segue us into another piece now. So we're going to do some case studies, actually, at the table. We wanted this to be interactive, and we want to think about all the knowledge and experience you also bring to this. And we have a collaborative effort here in trying to understand best practice. As we're doing that, you're going to have one of us or two of us at your tables helping with that discussion. I'd really love for you to think about how we could carry that conversation on. So once we're done in our little 60 minutes together here and we walk out the door, what can you talk about with each other? How can you think about these eight amazing ways to cultivate connection with each other? And how can we spread that out actually to our participants, the people that we're here to serve? So keep that in the back of your head, because we do have 60 minutes, and so we're only going to cover a couple of topics at each table, okay? Now you're going to know my age, because I'm going to have to put this thing down, look at my phone, and try and read off of it, which is your case study. So bear with me. And hold it like this. No, just kidding. So here's your case study. And this is not my case study. It is from a team member. I received a call from the shelter. The worker informed me that someone would like to talk to me about his gambling. We set up a time to meet at a coffee shop. In our discussion together, he told me he lost his wife a few years ago, and he felt lonely. He started drinking again and then started gambling. He lost his home, his truck, his boat, and all of his retirement savings. Then he incurred a lot of debt. The debt included credit cards, loans, line of credits, and overdraft. He now had minimal contact with his family, and he was homeless. So again, this individual went from having lots of things to having nothing, right? He has limited funds as he's a senior living on a pension, and in discussing some options in our program and supports and services in the community, the gambling was most concerning for him, and he wanted to stop. He gambled at the casino, so I accompanied him to the casino to do a VSE. And that's not unusual for the support services, right? Imagine, again, having to walk into the place that was triggering you and thinking about, this is how I'm going to go in there and talk to people and get this fixed for myself. Oh, lost my place. This was a quick process, and the staff was very encouraging with him, as we know you guys are, during a really difficult time. The shelter informed him that he could stay until he could get his finances in order to obtain his own place. This was a difficult, lengthy task. After discussing his options, he made an appointment to see an insolvency trustee to understand what all the options were. He asked again if the support person would accompany him through the process, and she did. Because his debt was so high and he was only living on a pension, his best financial option was bankruptcy. The support worker, I keep saying support worker because we don't really have a name now, so like my team member helped him make a list of what were those things that needed to be done, right? Because now we're looking at a whole bunch of stuff, aren't we? We're homeless. We are claiming bankruptcy. We've got all of these things that we need to look at. It took a couple of weeks for her and him to complete the list and to really think out comprehensively what was the best process or way to go about this. She touched base with him to see how things were going in a couple of weeks after that and whether or not he needed any more assistance. During that time, he was able to tell her that he had joined AA and he was feeling really supported. She suggested a few other things to him, and he also decided to join a weekly evening group at the Salvation Army to celebrate recovery, and really felt that that was empowering and healing for him. He started to feel better about himself, but living at the shelter was not optimum, and he still had disconnection with his family and still felt shame and guilt. And so, you know, I'd say to the room, anybody in here want to give up all their stuff and go live in a shelter? Probably not, right? So again, putting ourselves in his place. The process of finding affordable living is a really difficult task. She assisted him in completing all the appropriate paperwork. Even though he was connected with the best agencies, there's a really long waiting list. And so he had to continue to live at the shelter. That was taking a toll on him. And so they found an option for housing, which was to move away out of that particular area. He was offered financial support, and he accepted that option. So then my colleague continued to work with him, gave him a bunch of connections for where he was going and supports. He continued AA. His finances were set with bankruptcy, and after a few months, he was ready to see a program counselor. So it took a few months working with him, right? Just getting through all of those living situations and meeting basic needs. She touched base with him again a few months later. He was going to AA, not gambling, debt-free from bankruptcy, and had safe, affordable housing, and was seeing the gambling counselor. And now he was moving on to reconnect with his family. So that's your case study. Remember, you want to discuss these pieces when you walk out this door, because I know you're really excited, just like I am, to do that, right? And my colleagues are going to be at each table and help you.
Just going to break into your groups here for a sec. It sounds like there's lots of good discussion going on at the tables. I'm hearing process questions. Well, how do you do this or how do you do that? I'm hearing very specific feedback questions about, I've just kind of been eavesdropping in each session, more specifically about tools or language or ways that you need so that you can support the folks that you work with. So, I'm pleased that we got more session time in at the tables than we did, but what I'd like you to do now is just go to your devices, go to slido.com, NH2020, and then select ballroom A, B, because that's the ballroom we're in. And what I'd like you to do is just think, any questions that are still burning for you, would be great for us to have it, because then we can take that away from today's session, and we'll have a few minutes now to address some of the top questions that are happening in the room, and we'll close out. And we've got 10 minutes left for the session. Okay, so I'm just being mindful about time, so I'm just going to bring us back to the one room, one voice, which is probably my voice and yours. So question one, what is the one thing that you do not do that people may think, believe that you do do? It's a good question. Yeah, do you want to, Mike, sorry. Maybe I'll let you feel that, Brenda. Did everybody hear the question? What's one thing people think you do that you actually don't do?
The one thing that came to mind when I heard that question was money. So people are often looking for money, looking for help with their debt. So I can help you figure out where you're going to go and who you're going to talk to. I can't help you get money. There is no money. So people have heard of like the VSC unclaimed prizes. Is that to help people get out of debt with gambling? So we don't offer money. Yeah.
The other thing I think, that's why we were kind of wrestling with the name. There is an outreach piece to what we do, because people don't have to come into an office or a building to access the service, like counseling. So we go out to the field to meet people, but we also are not. So one of the things is that we have a small program, small budget, but we can certainly follow up with people by phone at the very least. In some areas, if they're lucky enough, we have somebody on the ground in their city, they can actually physically meet up with them in a coffee shop and support them physically to services, but we can also support them virtually through services by getting on a three-way call with them with Social Security or whatever that might be, or a housing application or whatever that might be.
Finding a local helper
on the ground. So there's lots here, and so there's that one. What are the specific support services offered for players of Indigenous heritage? Should they prefer them over traditional methods? Are there any? Yes, we do. We have a growing team. It's very much in our program mandate to increase our ability to serve Indigenous people across the province in culturally safer ways. And so currently, what we do offer is telephone counseling with an Indigenous counselor. We do offer Indigenous gambling outreach support virtually with an Indigenous support person. And we have our Indigenous coordinator director who is overseeing the quality of the services that are delivered and continuing to make it culturally safe and responsive. So that's what's available. We're not yet there where you're going to be able to get that in your city likely, right? It's tricky. We're trying to bring on quality people. We're trying not to rush it. We're trying to really get quality people on. As you know or may not know, our counseling services year after year for the last 5 years shows that we're above average internationally in our effectiveness. Now there's some questions that I also have to address, but before we go there, when family members. So in terms of affected others, I think it's a typical thing. We point them to things that they can do to take care of themselves, to protect themselves financially, to stop the bleed, and people are in different places with that. And sometimes they need to go to counseling to kind of figure out how they can get clear about where they're going to stop helping and so on, right? Is there a different protocol for someone who stops gambling through your program but then comes back again due to a relapse? It happens a lot. We know that addiction is cyclical, that it's different. It's not like you failed, because it's a spiral, right? Like you had skills and resources, you have growing experience, and it's just a journey that people are on, so it's not a problem at all. We have that both in our counseling stream, if people are doing counseling and they come back after relapse, or they just come back and work with a gambling outreach support person because they don't want to do counseling. We do all of it, so it's not a problem at all. Let's see, language barriers and support workers, it's offered through phone. We also have a commitment that we'll use professional interpreters where needed when someone's when they don't have English as an additional language. So we will lower that barrier as well. And we have support team members who are in the more common languages that we find in BC, so Cantonese and Mandarin. We have a Korean counselor who can also provide support. And we have several Punjabi counselors for counseling. We're needing to find Punjabi outreach folks. So I'm going to wrap soon. Now, there were two questions that New Horizons wanted us to make sure we addressed in closing. And I just have to find a photo for it. And there's the question. So what do we do with this information? I'm going to leave that question with you. Hopefully you have a better sense of how we engage, why we engage in the ways that we do. Certainly the structure of creating an outreach team, I think, has lowered the barrier for stigma to prevent people to access services. But also when we pick up the phone, the way you talk, as what Cheryl said, can you imagine someone coming into your home and asking you a whole bunch of intrusive questions? How open are you going to be to that when you're already distressed? So how we do it is really important. And hoping that you might choose to take away those cards and reflect in your own practice as you go forward in on whatever level or service role that you have when people come to you. How do you engage with them? What do we not know that requires future investigation to move the industry forward? So we have stunning numbers. We can see that people need the service and we're getting them in more ways than we want them to do. What we don't know right now is the impact of that service that we've offered. So in the next year or two, we're going to start to try to find some evidence that what we're doing is actually helping these folks who are not ready for counseling. Because if you come to our counseling, we have that metric. It's solidly the algorithmic analysis and so on is all there in terms of showing that, and we use that to do feedback, to make sure that we're getting them in a good place. We're going to look at implementing some similar kind of an outcomes evidence system in the outreach stream so that in 2 years from now, we can start to report to you, yes, we have the numbers, but here's what people reported to us in terms of the impact that we actually made. And I didn't have to go to counseling for it. Does that make sense? Thanks very much for your attention and time this afternoon, folks. Really glad you turned out, and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you.